time since 1973. Mother Millar, she holds a PhD in education and she has been teaching in both primary and secondary school, and she has simultaneously been the principal in the school. Not to stop here, she's an author, a counselor, a professor, and an associate editor in the Back to Godhead magazine, right? All that I have been mentioned, it is just a glimpse of Mother Umila, great achievement, and I encourage all the devotees, if you want to be inspired, please go and read on Mataji's biography, and you will realize that there's no limit in spiritual life, right? So today we are very blessed to have her with us, and also how she has been managing all these different roles, which leads us to today's topic, right? Sorry. So, we welcome Mother Umila, and the screen is all yours, Mataji.
I'm wondering about the timing.
1 hour.
1 hour. Total with questions?
It's like, if we it depends on the question that we have, and it depends on your time.
Okay, so I should try to finish in like 40 minutes and then leave time for questions, correct?
Exactly. As for your availability, Mataji. Thank you.
An hour total is good. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Mutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pratarani Nivasesa Sundivani Paskatya De Satarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamstha Manjakapa Jubhishcha Kipa Sindhavya Vatapati Tanam Pavanevya Vaishan Maybe Namah Namah. So it's April 17, 2021. This is in Mauritius over the internet. And we're going to be looking at, yes, if you can put your videos on, that's nice. It's a lot easier to teach when there are people instead of just photographs, if you can. We're going to be looking at women's social and spiritual roles. How do women live within society? Now, everybody, as Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 9:30, has two duties, conditional and constitutional. So our conditional duties are according to our body and mind. We have to sleep, we have to eat, we have to brush our teeth. We have duties in relationship to our body. And then we have duties in relationship to the real person, to the soul. So this applies to at least all human beings. I mean, it's occasionally you have animals, like the dog that Shivananda Singh gave mercy to, or you know, Jatayu. So occasionally you have animals that are able to take this up, but generally human beings. And human beings mean both male and female. It's not just male human beings have these two duties. So spiritual duties should be equally available to everyone. Spiritual duties should be equally available to everyone. In fact, I was just hearing this in, reading this in the Nectar Devotion, Chapter 2, how engaging in the process of bhakti is equally available to anyone. There's no discrimination at all. Even we were saying, you know, Shivananda Singh's the stray dog that he took care of, or Jatayu, who was a vulture. So spiritual duties are not even limited to the fact that one has a human body. They're certainly not limited by the color of your skin. It's not that I have to have more brown in my skin to do bhakti. The color of your hair, your eyes, what kind of family you were born in, if your family was a Pukka Brahmana family with all the samskaras, or your family were eating dogs, and like they do in some Asian countries, eating caterpillars, whatever. It doesn't matter. Spiritual duty, spiritual life is available to everyone. What to speak of to human women. there's no discrimination at all for spiritual duties. You can be 5 years old like Dhruva. You know, you can be 305 like Vishvamrita. It doesn't matter. Spiritual duties are equal for everyone. So by spiritual duties, we mean the 64 angas of bhakti as given by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and is outlined in the Nectar Devotion, Chapter 6, and so forth. And sometimes we take those 64 items and divide them into the categories of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, and so forth, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving. Now, you may say, well, I already knew this. This is boring. I thought you were going to talk about something interesting. But do we really know this? Do we really know this? We have seen in our Hare Krishna movement, and I have been a member of the Hare Krishna movement continuously since 1973, that often spiritual duties are misunderstood as material duties. Interesting, huh? That sometimes we might say, you know, kirtanam is only for men. Right? That's been actually a big thing in ISKCON. Only men leading kirtans or only men giving class. So that means someone is thinking that kirtanam is only for male humans. So sometimes we discriminate in the 64 angas of bhakti or the 9 processes of devotional service and say they're only available for men or they're only available for people from certain countries. So it's extremely important to be able to distinguish what are constitutional duties and what are conditional duties. And that's something that we seem in our Hare Krishna movement still to be confused about. I mean, we can understand that if you're going to drive a truck, that you have to be old enough to drive, that a 2-year-old can't drive a truck. So we can understand, okay, that even if I'm driving a truck for Krishna, that's still in the realm of conditional duties that become spiritualized. But kirtanam is just a spiritual duty, right? You can think of it as the fire, or the analogy that Srila Prabhupada gives over and over, the iron rod that's put in the fire. So the fire is bhakti, just the angas of bhakti. Our duties according to our body and mind that we do for Krishna are like the iron rod put into the fire. They can act like fire. If I drive a truck for Krishna's pleasure, that's as potent in bhakti as if I'm sitting and chanting. It acts like fire. But driving a truck depends on my material body, and chanting doesn't. So if we don't get this distinction, which seems like, oh, come on, I know this, but we don't seem to know this, and if we don't get this distinction right in the beginning, then everything else is messed up. Now, why is it sometimes confusing, this distinction? Why is it sometimes confusing? Because some of the angas of bhakti, and this is stated in the Nectar Devotion, some of the angas of bhakti are the same, or look almost the same, as some of the items of duties according to varna and ashrama. Let's look at brahminical duties. Worshipping the deity, teaching others to worship the deity, studying the scriptures, teaching others the scriptures. Oh, wait a minute. Those are also angas of bhakti. What about things in the Shudra Varna? Suppose you have a Shudra who's a musician, right? And suppose this musician likes to sing songs about Krishna. Well, that might be the same as kirtan. So we might get confused. If someone's doing kirtan, Are they doing it because they're in the Shudra Varna, or are they doing it because it's an Anga Bhakti that has nothing to do with Varna? If someone's worshipping the deity, are they doing that because they're in the Brahmana Varna, or are they doing it because they're in Bhakti and it has nothing to do with Varna? And so sometimes we get confused, and sometimes we think that some of the items of Bhakti are actually material activities. Or we might think some of the material activities are actually items of Bhakti. But generally, our confusion goes the other way. That we will put bodily distinctions on areas of bhakti, thinking that they're not really areas of bhakti. Interesting, isn't it? Now, what makes the difference between a brahmana worshipping the deity as a brahmana varna and worshipping the deity as bhakti? So I'd like to throw that to all of you. Anyone have some idea? How would you know? If someone's worshipping the deity, how do you know if someone's doing that because it's their Brahmana Varna, or are they doing it because they're doing Bhakti? Any ideas? It's an important thing to ask because there are going to be some differences in activities with whether you're male or female, but there aren't going to be any differences in activities in bhakti with whether you're male or female. So how do we know? How do you know? If somebody's worshipping the deity, is that because they're a brahmana by varna or because they're doing it by bhakti? Mahalakshmi?
Because it comes spontaneously, like a child. A child might have seen and might have even some dolls as deities, and naturally he's not a brahmana, he's just a 5 years old child and takes a flower and makes something for the Lord, and this is bhakti, and it's not related to the varna, it's spontaneous.
Oh, well, you're talking about spontaneous bhakti, and you're talking about a child, and that's a really nice example. But let's think about someone who's 25 and has Gayatri initiation in ISKCON, and they're worshipping the deity. Are they doing that because that's their varna as a brahmana, or are they doing that because it's in bhakti? Advaita Krishna Prabhu.
It's hard to say, Mataji.
It is.
Because it's impossible to say. Because we don't have a system that distinguishes one from the other.
Well, impossible is going to be a little... I'm going to struggle with the impossible one. And
what
I'd say... I struggle with the word impossible. You know, Prabhupada didn't like the word impossible.
Well, difficult to say.
Difficult. Certainly difficult. And that's why not very, very many of you raised your hands. Because you're like, well, that's a hard question. I don't know if I can answer that. Well, there is a system. The system is in the Shastra. I would agree we don't have a clear system in ISKCON, which is one of the reasons we're having to have this class. But yeah, this is really difficult. I agree. I don't think it's impossible. I hope it's not impossible.
Yeah.
I hope I haven't asked an impossible question and then I'd be a very bad teacher.
Yeah.
And you'd have to give me a failing grade as a teacher.
I belong to that class of fools, Prabhupada.
You're in the class. Well, it's a big group. I'm there too most of the time. Okay, bhakti, if it's done under the order of the spiritual master. All right, but brahmanas also are going to have spiritual masters. And the spiritual master... when Bodhi wrote this in the chat, the spiritual master may also tell the brahmana to do deity worship. So, good try. Any other ideas?
The same with the 25 years old. One person might not be a brahmana, but we come to the temple, and it comes natural to feel attraction to the Lord, to chant, and this is worshipping and dancing and even bringing flowers.
Okay, I think what you're trying to say, Mahalakshmi, is that it depends upon one's motive. I think that's what you're trying to say. And Advaita Krishna Prabhu, yes, it's very hard to tell what someone's motive is. It certainly is. It's hard for me to tell what my motives are. I often think that my motives are better. Bhakti is not dependent on the external classifications. It's purely a mood. Yes, it's a mood. All right. Now, I'd like to bring out something else. And here we're going to segue to, because we're talking about women's social and economic roles, right? That's our title. So when you're a brahmana by varna, varna means your economic role. It means what you're doing to maintain yourself, what you're doing for your livelihood. And in bhakti, bhakti is not a varna. Bhakti is not something one does for one's livelihood. Now, bhakti is not bound with varna. So you could have someone who's a plumber by trade, or who's a lawyer by trade, right? Or who's a banker by trade, and therefore would be in the Sudra, Kshatriya, or Vaishya varnas. But they're worshipping the deity as a devotee because they want to please the guru and because they want to come to love Krishna. If someone is worshipping the deity as a brahmana varna, then that's their means of livelihood. Now, let's say someone is engaged in deity worship and then they live on donations. The temple gives them donations. Other householders give them donations. That's their brahmana varna. Now, you can, if, and that's how they live. Now, remember, our varnas can also be bhakti when done for Krishna. So let's say that this is how I maintain myself. I maintain myself by worshipping the deity and living on the donations and the charity given to me for being a pujari. But I'm doing it because I want to serve Krishna. I have then bhakti-ized my varna. Like if I'm a plumber, or just today, we organized a crew of about 10 people. There's a devotee in the area that has a play set for children. So there's a devotee who's a construction worker, and he is organizing this crew of people to move the playground equipment to the temple. So his varna is to be a construction worker. Because he's doing it to please Krishna, it becomes bhakti-ized. Okay? But taking apart a play set is not one of the 64 angas of bhakti itself. It's his varna. So if you can get this, I know it's a fine point. All right. So we've established, at least theoretically, philosophically, in this class, that if you're a woman, you can do any of the 64 angas of bhakti, any of the 9 processes of bhakti, just the same as a man, just the same as anybody. That there's no bodily restriction on the 64 angas of bhakti. And if somebody puts one there, they don't understand what bhakti is. Bhakti is the duty of the soul. It has nothing to do with the body. So we're going to look at the fact that women also have a variety of economic roles and social roles according to Shastra. And we're going to be looking particularly at our main Vaishnav Shastra, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the, as someone who's a laborer but a supreme preacher, a deity worship preaching, same. So if someone is a preacher by occupation, if that's their occupation, and then they do it for Krishna, they're in the Brahmana Varna doing it for Krishna. If they have some other occupation and they're also a preacher, then they have a different Varna, some Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, but they also engage in the process of bhakti and they try to spiritualize their Varna. We would like everyone to be preachers. Yes? So, there's some conception that women have no varna, or perhaps that all women are shudras. So there's some conception that women have no varna, or that all women are shudras. There's also some conception that women have no ashrama, or that all women are grihasthas. So there's some concept that women are either devoid of ashram and varna, they have bhakti activities, but no varna activities and no ashram activities, or if they're going to be put into varna, they'd all be put in the shudra varna, and if they would be put in an ashram, they'd all be put in the grihastha ashram. Now, there's certainly some evidence for this point of view. And often this point of view that women have no varna, or that all women are in the Shudra varna, or that women have no ashram, or that all women are in the Grihastha ashram, is a point of view that is sometimes put forward by certain people in our Hare Krishna movement, including certain leaders, in the name of varnashram. And they'll say, when we institute varnashram in the world, women will simply do Shudra-type work in the household. So just like even today in India, the vast majority of people have servants. So only the poorest people don't have servants. Pretty much everybody else has a servant. And what does the servant do? The servant will often, you'll often get a servant who will cook, who will clean, who will take care of the laundry. You may get a servant who takes care of the children. So the only difference between the wife and the servant would be in the romantic relationship with the husband. Otherwise, their concept, a lot of people have this concept, is that the only duties for a woman would be like that of a domestic servant. As a married woman doing the work of a domestic servant, a household servant, cooking, cleaning, laundry, child care. All right. Is there any... There is... Can any of you think of what evidence there is in the Bhagavatam in favor of this view? What would be evidence to support this concept that all female humans are designed simply to be in the Grihastha ashram, and in the Grihastha ashram, the only work they do is Shudra work as a domestic servant? What would be our evidence in favor of that point of view? Anybody? Advaita Krishna again, yes.
Sorry, it's me again.
Well, no, it's good. You're enthusiastic.
I find no specific sort of explanation of women being told or being said or being, you know, that kind of presentation where they are meant to be just doing household chores. But I can find many examples to the contrary. And even in the case of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, she was meant to be in the shelter of son Kapila Dev. He didn't actually say that she is actually just a maidservant. But Draupadi and Kunti, and even in the case of the ultimate being Sarmishta and Devyani, they don't look like they're just persons who are there to be a dasi.
Yes. So they're counter examples.
Yeah,
they're examples against that, yes. But thank you. So the main example, the main reason that people take, the main evidence that people give in favor of this point of view is in the seventh canto, when Narada Muni describes the duties according to Varna and Ashramas, and then he has a particular section describing the duties of women. So on the basis of that, they will say that the duties of women are outside that of the Varnas and the Ashramas. So that is the main evidence. Now let's look at, and you should know that because people will use that. So now let's look at the evidence that women have Ashrama and that women have Varna. All right, let's look first at the evidence that women have Ashrama. So we have in the Shastra women who have been educated. Even the cowherd ladies of Vrindavan were educated in chanting mantras, like after the situation with Putana. We find in the works of the Goswamis, they were educated in writing letters. The works of the Goswamis frequently detail the cowherd girls of Vrindavan reading and writing. So there was some kind of education going on. Now, if there was education going on among the Vaishya girls, there was certainly education going on among the Kshatriya and Brahmana girls. Then we have a lot of evidence in the Bhagavatam for women being renounced. We have when the Pandavas took up renunciation, Draupadi and Subhadra did as well. When Dhritarashtra took up renunciation, Gandhari and Kunti did as well. When King Malayadwaja took up renunciation, Madarekshana did as well. When Prithu took up renunciation, Archi did as well. And there are descriptions in the Bhagavatam specifically for women renunciates. Specific instructions. How a woman renunciate should dress, what a woman renunciate should do. So it's quite clear in the Bhagavatam that women have education when they're young. Women are not simply born married. I've been at a lot of births, at least 50 births of babies. I have yet to see a woman be born, a little baby girl be born in a wedding dress. So women are not born married. They also have education in Vedic society. They definitely had education. At least according to the Bhagavatam, women could read and write. We have Rukmini writing a letter, of course. And then we have that according to the Bhagavatam, women also take up a life of renunciation. Now, generally, they do this if the husband dies, if the husband takes sannyas, or at the time that the husband takes up renunciation. It's not that when the husband takes up renunciation that the woman continues as a grihastha. The woman also takes up renunciation, whether separately from the husband, as in the case of Devahuti, or together with the husband, as in the case of Archi, and so forth. So we have established that women have ashrama. Now, their ashrama was a little different. Prabhupada talks about that the women didn't generally go as brahmacharinis to live in the guru's home. And they weren't performing the same austerities as the brahmachari, but they had some time of education. Okay, I'm getting a notice that my internet was unstable. Can you all hear me?
Yes, Nalda, now we can hear you.
You can, okay. I can switch to another system if this gets bad again. I have another system set up as a backup. All right, now let's look at women's varna. By the way, we also have some indications in Shastra and in tradition of women who never married, who were renunciates their whole life. That was unusual, but it was even unusual for men to be lifetime renunciates. Even in Mahaprabhu's time, generally both men and women married. So there's also a lot of evidence in the Srimad Bhagavatam in favor of women having varna. There's a lot of stories that deal with the varna of the woman, especially in relationship to marriage. Yayati and Devayani is one example. You also have that of Ajamila. So he was married to a Brahmana woman, and then he was married to a Shudra woman. You have Ramaharshan Sutta, whose mother was a Brahmana, whose father was a Kshatriya. You have these considerations of varna of the woman, particularly in discussions of marriage, are all over the Srimad Bhagavatam. It always astonishes me when people say that women don't have varna. I just think, do you read the same Bhagavatam that I'm reading? Because it's everywhere. It's all over the place. Whenever we're looking, particularly they're looking at it in relationship to marriage, but the varna of the woman is mentioned. Now, if we're going to talk about women having varna, Krishna says, Chatur varna mayasristam guna karma vivagashaha. Anybody want to argue with that? Does Krishna say, Chatur varna mayasristam guna karma vivagashaha? Oh, and that applies to men. And to women, varna is by birth. Is there any such verse? Anybody? Is there any verse anywhere? Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Works of the Goswamis, that says women's varna is by birth. Okay. So women's varna is guna and karma. I want you to think about this for a minute. Women have a varna, and that means guna and karma. It means a psychological disposition, and it means actual doing something. Now again, your varna is your livelihood. It's how you make a living. It's your economic contribution to the society. It's how you maintain yourself. One of the main messages of the Bhagavad Gita, especially in chapter 3 and chapter 18, is that whatever nature you have, your livelihood should match that. And you shouldn't try to do someone else's livelihood, even if you think you can do it perfectly. Now, sometimes people think that women's varna is by birth, that if a woman is from a Kshatriya family, she's a Kshatriya. And sometimes people think that women's varna is by marriage, that women are just kind of nothing when they're born, and that if they're married to a Kshatriya, they become a Kshatriya. So some people think it's by the father, some people think it's by the husband. If women became the varna of their husband upon marriage, there would be no meaning to pratiloma and anuloma marriages. That marriage would have no meaning. So if one thinks that varna for the women is by birth, one would have to find some sort of scriptural evidence that for men it's guna and karma, and women it's janma. Or if one thinks it is by marriage, then the whole concept of pratiloma and anuloma makes no sense at all. And a lot of the stories in the Bhagavatam would make no sense. If a woman becomes the varna of her husband, then when a Jamila marries a Shudrani, she would become a Brahmani. But she doesn't. When he marries a Brahmani, she's a Brahmani. And when he marries a Shudrani, she stays a Shudrani. We also find in the Bhagavatam, interestingly enough, that the children of these mixed marriages tend to be more identified with the mother than with the father. Like Rama Harshan Sute, his mother was a Brahmani, his father was a Kshatriya, and he was particularly identified with being a Brahmana. Vidura, his mother was a Shudrani, his father was ostensibly a Kshatriya, his biological father was a Brahmana, and he was primarily identified as being a Shudra. Nanda and Vasudeva both have the same father, who's a Kshatriya. Nanda has a Vaishya mother, and Vasudeva has a Kshatriya mother, and again, the children are more identified with the varna of the mother than the father. So we see that when there's a marriage between different varnas, the woman keeps her varna, and those marriages are not recommended, especially marriages where the woman is of a higher varna, and the influence of the mother on the children is shastrically considered to be greater. We also have the interesting idea of varna not being by birth in the story of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. So Kardama Muni specifically asks the Lord for a compatible wife, and he is without any doubt a Brahmana. And the Lord says to him, you will get a wife, Sama, of the same disposition as yourself. Now Devahuti is born in a Kshatriya family. She's the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. But she is understood by God himself to have the same nature as that of Kardama Muni. So although she's born in a Kshatriya family, she has the nature of a Brahmani. And in fact, she very easily adapts to Kardama Muni's life in the forest and to a life of austerity and simplicity. Of course, he gives her a life of great opulence later as a gift of his mystic power. But she was completely compatible with his Brahmana life. That's what he asked for. That's what the Lord gave him. So the fact that she was born in a Kshatriya family did not mean that she had the nature of a Kshatriya. She had the nature of a Brahmani. So we see all these many examples in the Bhagavatam that a woman's nature is not by her birth, it's by her qualities, and it's not by her marriage, that the woman maintains her own varna after marriage to a man of a different varna. So if a woman has the qualities of a varna, we can understand why the Shastra would suggest very strongly that men and women of the same varna would marry, because the different varnas have very different psychologies. Yes, the Brahmanas and the Shudras are happier with simplicity, and the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas are more inclined towards opulence, for example. So there's going to be some incompatibility. The Brahmanas are more inclined to forgiveness, and the Kshatriyas are more inclined to punishment. The Kshatriyas are more inclined to generosity, and the Vaishyas are more inclined to profit. The Shudras are more inclined to quality, and the Vaishyas are more inclined to profit. So if you're going to have a mix of the varnas, there's going to be some incompatibility of psychology. But there's another reason, and I think that people just don't really think about this. That if a woman has varna, she's going to have the karma of the varna. Now imagine if she doesn't, because I'll get some devotees who will, after I present things up to this point, they'll say, all right, women have varna and they have the psychology of the varna, but they don't have the work of the varna. Their only work is as a household servant to the husband. And my answer to that is, again, I'm sorry, but it's God. It's not me, it's God. And unless we don't accept that Krishna is God, or unless we don't accept that the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's words, that's another issue. But if we accept that Krishna, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, is Bhagavan, and he says, Chatur Varnam Mayashristam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Krishna says it's guna and karma. So just on the basis of that, anyone who has the guna of a varna must also have the karma of that varna. And anybody who wants to argue with God, go ahead. I try to argue with God sometimes. It doesn't usually turn out in my favor. Well, if women have the karma of... Let's look actually first at a practical situation. Let's say men have the guna and karma of varna, and women don't. They just have the guna of varna. Well, if you have an inclination, a certain kind of inclination, but you can't act on that inclination, you can't live according to your inclination, how are you going to feel? Please put in the chat box. As many people as possible, I'd like you to put in the chat box. If you have a certain proclivity, you have a certain psychology, you have certain desires, you have certain talents, but you have no way to demonstrate them, you have no way to exercise them, you have nothing you can do with them, how are you going to feel? Okay, so people who say that God designed men to have the guna and karma of varna, but only designed women to have the guna and not the karma, is saying that the Supreme Lord has designed half of the human race to a life of frustration and pretense, yes. Now, I don't know why anybody would want to worship a god like that. He sounds pretty nasty to me. I'm going to give you desires, inclinations, talents, and I'm not going to let you use them. You have to pretend that you're someone else with some other kinds of talents and some other kinds of inclinations and not use them. So just from a logical point of view, I don't understand why anybody would be interested in such a god. All right, now if women have the karma of a guna, of varna, what does that mean? So let's now look at pre-industrial society. In pre-industrial society, men and women married when they were very young. When Prabhupada got married, his wife was only 11. When Gandhi got married, they were both 13. Bhaktivinoda got married at 14, meant his wife must have been like 12. Right? Mahaprabhu married at 14. Lord Ramachandra married at 16. They were marrying very, very young. When we say that the woman should serve her husband, that included serving him in his varna. Prabhupada writes about an ideal family situation where he says that he would see a family of potters, and the husband and wife were making the pots together and training the children to make the pots, and then going to sell them together in the market. Or Prabhupada talked about an ideal family where the wife is spinning the thread, the husband is weaving the cloth, together they make cloth and they are selling it. If we think about the gopis, which we call the cow herd girls, they are the cow herd girls. Well, what were they doing? We know there's pastimes where these cow herd girls were taking the milk products to sell them in Mathura. And of course, then you have all these funny pastimes where Krishna pretends to be a boatman to help them take their milk products to Mathura, but the boat starts leaking and he has all these funny pastimes. Or where Krishna tries to tax their milk products, right? And he has all these funny pastimes. But my point is that the women were the women of the cow herding community. They were gopas and gopis. They were businesswomen. When they were churning the milk, they weren't doing that just for their household. They were also doing it to sell. And they were going to Mathura. Groups of girls alone, a group of young girls alone, were going across the river to Mathura as salespeople. And of course you have the fruit seller who came to Nandamarsh's door also. Someone gave the example of Draupadi. Draupadi explains in the Mahabharata, we're going out of the Bhagavatam, but Draupadi explains in the Mahabharata to Satyabhama that she was the only one who knew the income and expenditure of the Pandavas, that she was managing the treasury. We would call that today the secretary of the treasury. She also said that she was managing the royal household of 100,000 people. In modern terms, that would make her the mayor of a reasonably sized city or town. So she was managing 100,000 people, and she was the only one, she said. She said to Satyabhama, I am the only one who knows the income and expenditure of the Pandavas. She was helping to run the country. And we have Brahmana women like Arundhati, who were helping their husband teach in their school. So the service to the husband, we say the wife serves the husband. One reason why all of the Shastras recommend that men and women of the same varna should marry is that when the woman does her career with a man who's of the same varna, it's part of her serving her husband. And this was especially prevalent in pre-industrial society. It still exists today. You know, the hardware store run by the husband and wife, the farm run by the husband and wife. We have, of course, in many countries of the world, we have couples who are in political power together. Couples where the husband and wife are lawyers or where the husband and wife are doctors. And that's not uncommon at all. Another aspect of pre-industrial society was extended family. So in an extended family, everything isn't going to fall on the young wife and mother, all the domestic duties. She's got her mother-in-law, she's got her sisters-in-law, maybe even her mother and sisters live nearby. My older sister married a Yemeni man who was the oldest of 10 children. And most of his brothers and sisters lived in one little area. They each had their own house, but they lived in a small area around his mother and father. And the uncles and aunties were like other mothers and fathers. And they would share cooking. I mean, I remember when my oldest son and my daughter were first married, we used to share cooking. So one day a week we would eat.
What's going on?
Somebody has to mute here. One day a week we'd eat at my son's house, and one day a week my daughter would cook, and then one day a week my unmarried son would cook, and one day a week I would cook. And so we would share cooking, and so it wasn't a burden on one woman that she had to cook all the meals. And we would share the care of the children. And also, again, in pre-industrial society, there were a lot more human servants who were affordable. I had a good friend, Indian, born in America. and he married an Indian girl born in India. And when he had the wedding in India, she said, I want 15 children. And after being in America for a few months, she says, I don't want more than 3. He said, why? She said, well, in India, I had a servant who would pick up the dirty clothes and wash them and dry them and iron them and fold them and put them away. And she says, here in America, I have to take the dirty clothes. I have to sort them into colors and whites. I have to put them in the washing machine. I have to take them out of the washing machine. I have to put them in the dryer. I have to iron them. I have to fold them, and I have to put them away. So in pre-industrial society, there were human servants. There was extended family, and there were human servants. I mean, when I was growing up, my mother didn't need to work for money. My father was a very wealthy man. But my mother did not do a lot of domestic jobs. We had servants. We had a servant who cleaned. We had a servant who did the laundry. We had a servant who did most of the cooking. I mean, my mother also cooked. But we had a servant to take care of me. And so my mother worked probably at least half time, probably at least 20, 30 hours a week. She worked for religious charities. She actually was the leader of several different international religious charities. And this has been the case for all but the poorest women from the beginning of time. And there's another very interesting thing about pre-industrial society, and that is that you didn't go to work. Like Chanakya Pandit says, it's a happy man who doesn't have to go to work. So people used to work from their home or right next to their home. Maybe they had a hardware store on the street level, and then they had an apartment on top or in the back. Like when Prabhupada rented that place, Matchless Gifts, and there was a courtyard in the back and then an apartment. Right? You're a farmer. You live on your farm. Even today, political figures often live right where they're going to do their work, or very close to their work. You know, the doctor, he'd come to your home, or you would go to the doctor's home. We talk about Guru Kula. You go to the guru's family. So the school was in the guru's home. This concept of going to a factory, going to an office, is very much part of the Industrial Revolution. So it was very easy. It was very easy for women to do their varna as part of being a married woman with children. They married young, and the husband and wife were learning their varna together. The wife was assisting in the husband's varna from home with the help of extended family and servants. And so women could have an average of 6 children and take care of their husband and take care of their household while still getting to use their nature and their propensities and their talents for the economic good of their family and society. And they could do all that for Krishna and bhaktiize it, and in addition, engage in the activities of bhakti. Something very sad and unfortunate has happened in human society. On the one hand, we're happy about it because I can be sitting here in America giving a class in Mauritius, and I know there's people online from Croatia and the UK and Spain and other places. So we're grateful for that aspect of technology. But industrialization really damaged the world, especially for women. By industrialization taking work out of the home and concentrating people around work and mechanizing domestic service. Industrialization has made it very difficult to work from home. It's made it very difficult to have an extended family, and it's all but eliminated the concept of human servants. When industrialization started, women were given a terrible choice. Do I marry, have a family, and take care of my family, or do I work? Before that, that choice wasn't there. You married, you had children, you took care of your family, and you worked. It was all one package. Now they had to choose. Biology force the choice to home. Most people are not going to be celibate, and not being celibate means you're going to have babies, they need to be taken care of. And so the women gave up their varna. What happens when you give up your varna? You become frustrated. The women were extremely frustrated and unhappy. Well, along came the sexual revolution, along came widespread socially accepted birth control, and then legalized abortion. Wow. Women didn't have to make that choice anymore, did they? Biology was no longer forcing women to be child bearers and child carers at a young age. All of a sudden, women could say, I'm going to put off having children until I'm 25. Naturally, biologically, most people can't do that. Or I'm going to put off having children until I'm 30 or 35. All of a sudden, women could do that. And they could say, I'm going to focus on career. So whereas when industrialization first started, women chose ashram and gave up varna. As industrialization progressed, women chose varna and gave up ashram. And so now you have women getting into their career, studying, marrying late, having children late, or not marrying at all. And it's not that most women in the world are celibate. They're having a series of different relationships. And so the family and the structure of society is falling apart. So you had a situation first where women were very frustrated that they couldn't work according to their nature and their propensity. They were stuck just doing the work of a domestic servant, which is only going to be the nature and propensity of some women. And then you had the reverse situation where women could get into the careers that they wanted and they could work according to their varna, but then they lost their ashrama. And ashrama is a shelter. They lost their shelter. So you have well-intentioned people, well-meaning people, who think that what we want to do is go back to a situation where women had ashrama and no varna. But not only would that be very frustrating for women, it would also be anti-shastra. So what are we going to do? We're not going to be able to totally reverse industrialization. We're not going to have everybody go back and live on the land with extended family and servants. That may work for some people, it won't work for everyone. What we can do, we can A, engage everyone equally in bhakti, which means we have to identify what is bhakti. Right now, in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we're not fully doing that. We are barring women from some of the 64 angas of bhakti, saying that we're doing that because there's a difference between men and women in bhakti. So we should make bhakti totally 100% egalitarian. Srila Prabhupada said only in bhakti can there be equal rights and equal facility for everyone. The next thing we should do is we should try to return to earlier marriages and more extended family and more community. The next thing we should do is we should think about how can men and women marry who have similar varna. And the next thing we can do is work on ways that women can do their varna primarily from home. How can they run a school from home or help work in government at home? Like one second-generation devotee I know is a lawyer, and she said, I've decided to be an immigration lawyer because it's the kind of thing I can do from home. So I can also take care of a family. And it, ironically, part of the benefit of industrialization is that as it has progressed, it has opened up more and more work from home. And perhaps one of the things we hate about the current pandemic is all the work from home, but perhaps one of the benefits of the pandemic is showing, you know, there's a lot of work that can be done from home or right next to the home. And when we return to that, then everybody, both male and female, can have bhakti. Bhakti eyes varna, and bhakti eyes ashram. Then we're complete, then we're holistic, then we're taking care of everybody's psychological needs, physiological needs, and spiritual needs. So, questions, comments?
Hi, Krishna. Thank you, Romila. We open the session for question and answer. Kindly you raise your virtual hand if you have any question, comment. There was a question in the chat box earlier, Romila. The question was from Kinchana Damodar Prabhu. How about someone who is a laborer, for example, a Shudra, but a Supreme Preacher or a Vyapasvachak?
Mataji already answered.
Already answered. Okay. Already read the question. I read the question as soon as it was typed in and I answered it.
Okay, sorry, I didn't see that.
Not a problem. Okay, here we have one. If a woman has a certain varna, is it bad that she takes care of her household? Well, of course not. That's her ashram duties. You have duties in bhakti, you have duties in ashram, and you have duties in varna. You have to do all three of them. Is it wrong that the man works and the woman takes care of the griha and children? If you have the man, only the man is working, and only the woman is taking care of the household, then that would only be that would only work if the woman was a Shudra by Varna, and in the Shudra Varna, she has the nature of a domestic servant. So if a person is a Shudra by nature, and the kind of Shudra work they love to do is domestic duties, and the husband has other things he likes to do, it's a mix-match, then that would work. But if a woman is not a Shudra by nature and not a domestic servant in the Shudra category, and that's all she's doing, she's going to feel very frustrated. Because mothers are the first gurus. Isn't it vital for women to take care of the children? Yeah, sure. It's vital for the husband and wife to take care of the children, and the in-laws, and the aunties, and the uncles, and the village. Junk food is a result of many women working. That's because they have to go out to work. And they don't have any extended family and they don't have any servants. The problem isn't that they're working. The problem is that they're working out of the house. The problem is that there isn't an extended family and there's no servants. Well, there is kind of a servant. Where does the junk food come from? You're buying it from the shop. So someone else is cooking it for you. That's a perversion of servants. Instead of having a servant come to your home and cooking fresh things in your kitchen that's been pulled out of your garden, your servant is working in a factory and making it, and you're going to the shop and buying it, but you're still depending on servants. Women are working and have no time to prepare fresh prasad. That's because they're working outside the home. That's because there's no extended family and there's no servants. Then if a woman has a certain varna, is it not acceptable that she uses it for Krishna's service instead of for economic support? Now that's a very interesting question. So if you're saying that, you're still saying the woman's going to have the time to do that. First you're arguing that she has no time to do her varna, and then you're saying she has the time to do her varna for Krishna. Everything should be done for Krishna, my dear friends. People always talk about balancing your material and spiritual life. No, we spiritualize our material life. That's one of the big messages of the Bhagavad Gita, 4:24. Right? The offering, everything. Everything becomes Brahman, everything becomes spiritual. Even if you're using your varna for a livelihood, which we're all supposed to do somewhere between the ages of 15 to 50 or so, you should be doing that for Krishna. That's the message of the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? You're going to fight for me. Mama Nusram Yujicha, think of me while you're fighting. Fight is a service to me. Fight is my instrument. Well, that doesn't matter if your varna is fighting, or your varna is writing, or your varna is plumbing, or your varna is hairdressing, or your varna is cow protection, or it doesn't matter, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 18th chapter, everybody, by performance of their work, can become perfect if they do that work for Krishna. Should you also use your varna tendencies in Lord Chaitanya's mission directly? Yes, absolutely. Prabhupada says, everyone has some extraordinary talent, and to use our talent for Krishna is successful life. So yes, whatever talents you're using to make your livelihood, spiritualize that, spiritualize your livelihood, and then also do something directly in Mahaprabhu's mission with your talents. Definitely. That's part of the way you spiritualize your livelihood. Is it not? Then if a woman has a... what weighs heavier, duties of a wife or mother or varna? They all should be harmonized. So, again, ideally, if the husband and wife has the same varna, so you and your husband are running a school together, you and your husband are running a government together, you and your husband are running a legal practice together, you and your husband are running a candle business together, you and your husband are running a farm together. It's what weighs heaviest is we should love Krishna. Bhakti should always be the main thing. But maybe the way I do my bhakti right now is to wash the dishes. And maybe the way I do my bhakti right now is to teach a class. And maybe the way I do my bhakti right now is to cut somebody's hair for Krishna. But the bhakti is always the heaviest. Yes, varna can be directed towards serving Krishna. All your varna should be... everything we do should be directed to serving Krishna. Even making my money, making my livelihood. That should be to glorify Krishna, to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. And again, I can use it directly in the mission. How do we make our voice heard? I don't know. I'm doing it right now. Take it and do it. Run with it. Sometimes man stays at home and takes care of the household, and she goes out and earns for the family. Well, then you're just reversing the problem. I mean, unless the man is a shudra with the nature of a domestic servant. So, like, my aunt and uncle had a butler. Like, in my household, all the servants were ladies. We never had any manservants when I was growing up. I had an auntie, my mother's sister, who had a manservant. And I mean, I know many people, especially in India, they have both male and female servants. So there are certain men, that's their nature, to be domestic servants. So if you have a mixed up matched marriage, where the man is a shudra by varna, and has the nature of being a domestic servant, and the woman is a kshatriya by varna, then yeah, maybe the woman's going to be a police officer, or a firefighter, or a mayor, or a lawyer, or a judge, and the man's going to be home cooking and cleaning and taking care of the children. But it's a kind of odd situation, isn't it? You know, so that might be the case. But then again, you're talking about no extended family and no servants and a mixed match of varnas. Ideally, that doesn't happen. You know, I mean, it does actually happen in reality, but ideally that doesn't. That's not the way Krishna has designed the universe. Krishna's designed the universe so that we figure out people's varna when they're like by 12 or 14. You marry people of the same varna when they're young. They grow and learn their occupation and livelihood together as partners. And, you know, if this has gone on for generations, then the woman's going to marry into a family where the whole extended family is of the same varna. I mean, sometimes it goes the other way. Like with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his married daughter stayed with him and his wife, and his son-in-law moved in with them. So sometimes the man might become part of the woman's family. But again, if this has gone on for generations, and you marry people according to their nature with career, then you just, these situations just don't arise. But you're always going to have some families where the husband likes to cook more than the wife does. I mean, that's just, I know many families like that. I mean, I literally know many families like that. The husband prefers to clean, the wife doesn't like to clean. The husband likes to cook, the wife doesn't like to cook. There's one family I know, one of the most successful preaching couples in our Hare Krishna movement. They are very, very successful preachers, also in a wide demographic. So they're in a Western country, and they preach to Indians, to Westerners, married, single, highly educated, uneducated. They're very successful. So they're both business people. The husband runs a Govinda restaurant, which also has a preaching component. So there's also classes and kirtans that go on in the downstairs of the restaurant, and where they follow up with people to take classes in Bhagavad Gita and Krishna book and cooking and things like that. The woman runs boutiques, and she actually designs half the clothing that are in the boutiques. She used to run 5 boutiques, I think now she's down to 3. And the boutiques are highly successful, so much so that they were able to donate $500,000 to the TOVP. They've been able to fund huge preaching programs of various ISKCON leaders. And if ever, restaurants are a tricky business. If the restaurant has a bad month, the boutiques are able to sustain it. Anyway, she told me they had an arranged marriage, and they met at the fire yajna. She told me that she went in the kitchen one day, soon after they were married, and didn't work out very well. She went in the kitchen the next day, and her husband looked at her and said, "You are never allowed to cook again." And for the rest of their marriage, she never cooked. But as I say, they're one of the most successful. They have 2 lovely children, both devotees, married to devotees. So they're one of the most successful preaching couples that I know of in the movement. And they're very happy and satisfied in their preaching and in their varna and ashram duties. Yes. Our extended family is still practical at times. Let's get back to this. Let's get back to extended families or villages. We have little children. How do we understand the varna aspect? How do we explain this? That's another seminar, Mohini. And I'm working with a devotee named Rukmini. Legally, her name is Dr. Ruchira Datta, not my god sister, Rukmini. We are working on a book on varna and how to help our children understand their varna at a young age and guide them in that. And I don't have time at all to discuss that today. I do have videos on YouTube. If you go to my YouTube channel, so I have videos on varna there and explaining about varna. You're welcome to peruse those. A great question, and I if I had another 2 hours, which I don't, then we could look at that. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Maybe taking the discussion back to some Shastric quotes and what Srila Prabhupada said. Very often you see in the Bhagavad Gita 3 things quoted together: Istriya, Vaishya, Tata, Shudra. What are the premises that it gets to that? Even when Vyasadeva writes, or even in the purports, or even in Bhagavad Gita.
All right. And yes, this is the kind of thing I expected people to bring up when I ask what's the evidence against women having varna in ashrama. And you could say, well, women are just thrown into this category of they're all thrown into this category of shudra. And I see that the reason for that is that even when women are in a varna, they are meant to be in that varna as an assistant to the husband and not independently. And so because of that, they are considered in the assistant category. Now, it's interesting, even if you look at just shudras. So there are some shudras that are just shudras. Just like when the world is normal, I spend a lot of time at Govardhana, India. Hopefully the world will be normal again and I'll be able to spend time at Govardhana again instead of just looking at pictures of Govardhana on my wall and online and crying. But anyway, when I'm in Govardhana, so there's this guy in Govardhana town. He has a piece of a cardboard box on the street, and he has a little box of tools, and he fixes your flip-flops. He fixes your shoes, your chappals, your flip-flops. Some people call them slippers. So he's a Shudra, undoubtedly. He's doing Shudra work, but he's his own boss. He sets his own hours. He sets his own location. He sets his own rates. If he doesn't want to work on a particular day, you know, whatever. Right? Then you have Shudras who particularly like to assist Brahmanas. They're Shudras, but they like to work in the Brahminical field as assistants. Then you have Shudras who like to assist Kshatriyas. They're Shudras, but they particularly like to work in the Kshatriya field as assistants. And then you have Shudras, they're Shudras, but they like to work in the Vaishya field as assistants. So they're Shudras who like to assist Kshatriyas. They don't like to assist Brahmanas or Vaishyas, and they're not going to set up their own little shoe-fixing shop. So I see that women who are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras, they're working as Brahmanis, but as assistants. So in that way, you can sort of kind of say they're Shudras.
Would that infer that they would not take leading roles?
Generally
in the
not.
System?
Generally not. Sometimes. I mean, we definitely have some historical cases. Gangamata Goswamini was made the queen. So, generally not. Generally not. If they took a leading role, it was alongside a husband. Yes,
they would. Would we conclude, therefore, that this idea of Striyat Vaishya Tatasudra each time and every time Prabhupada makes a comment, it is because it's inferring, I'm just being the devil's advocate, inferring that it is in relationship to women's role as being just assistants, never leading, or is that too much of a presumption?
Be careful about absolutes. If you say just assistants and never leading, you're going to have a problem with instances where women were leading. Because there were definitely some instances.
Mostly, yeah.
Yes, you could say mostly.
Mostly. Yeah.
Mostly. If you're going to take Shastra holistically, you'd need to do that. There's no way you could take Shastra holistically and not do that. Because there's so much evidence in the Shastra of women having Varna. It's just overwhelming. And women's varna not being determined by their father or by their husband, but being determined on their own strength. And you have, you know, a number of purports where Prabhupada talks about how if you don't have this kind of compatibility, marriage is unhappy. And he talks about finding this compatibility through astrology. I'm not saying everybody should go run out and find an astrologer, but the point is that if it's determined by astrology, that means it's the woman on her own. If I say I'm going to determine if the girl is the Brahmin Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra by looking at her astrology, it's not. I'm not looking at her father. I'm looking at her. But yeah, the mood was as an assistant. So you have this sort of, and I'm really glad you brought this up. By the way, the vast majority of times that Srila Prabhupada brings up this verse from the Bhagavad Gita from the 9th chapter, he does it to show that everybody's eligible for bhakti. One of my good friends brought up the irony of this, that there are devotees who will bring up this verse to say that all women are Shudras. But Srila Prabhupada didn't use that verse that way. Prabhupada used that verse the vast majority of the time to say that everyone is eligible for bhakti. Can women be leaders in bhakti? I would say yes. But then you've got to decide what's bhakti and what's varna and ashrama. And that's not so easy to figure out. Because externally it may look the same. Two people are worshipping the deity. One's doing it as a Brahmin Varna for Krishna and one's doing it in bhakti.
Yeah, like the very question you asked in the beginning.
Yes.
How can you tell?
It's difficult.
It's difficult.
You can tell whether or not someone's doing it for their livelihood. Is it their means of maintenance? If it's their means of maintenance and they're spiritualizing it, that's spiritualized varna. If they have another means of maintenance, then it's just bhakti. Both act as bhakti. One is not better than the other. The difference is who gets to do what. So someone who's a Vaishya by nature should not do brahminical work as their livelihood.
But interestingly, as you said, if women have varnas, and it is clear that from Srimad Bhagavatam in the stories of Mahabharata and Ramayana that women have varnas, it actually, in effect, it gives more credibility to that statement that you made, that it is falling in the category not of being lesser or more, but in the category of just being assistants.
Yes.
Because they do have varnas.
Yes.
But if they are put together in that explanation of the ninth chapter of the Gita, then actually it gives a lot more credibility to that explanation of yours that it is in the category of being assistant more than discriminatory.
Thank you.
Am I right?
Yes. Yes. Now imagine for a moment if society actually looked like that. People in general would be so happy. And they'd be sane and they'd be stable. Why are we asking women to choose between varna and ashram? By the way, we often ask men to choose between varna and ashram too. You know, when men have to work out of the home and men have to travel for work and this and that, they often neglect their families. And then they really regret it when they die. There's a book I like to quote in one of my seminars of a nurse who worked with people as they were dying, and she said, every man who worked a full-time job regretted at the time of death that he had worked so hard and hadn't been with his family. She said, 100%. So the Industrial Revolution has also harmed men. You have to be away from your family for so many hours. You know, if you work from home, you think about Nandamars and Yasoda and Krishna, you know, they're all working together. They're all working together to take care of the cows, to process the products of the cows, to sell the products of the cows. And that was a sane and stable society. And people were happy. They were happy, what does Krishna say? Everything available for living happily and attaining liberation. So, what can we do? In our own life, let's look at our own life and try to at least move toward this. For our young daughters, figure out what their varna is, train them in their varna, and in a way where they can work from home without neglecting their family. Help people to marry who are compatible. Help to establish villages and extended networks where we help each other out. And engage everyone equally in bhakti. I mean, even from a common sense point of view, don't we know women who are different? I mean, like just common sense, just our everyday experience. I know some women who, you know, their greatest happiness is to do artwork and carpentry. And other women whose greatest happiness, like this devotee I was talking about, is to do business. And other women whose greatest happiness, they want to be a lawyer, they want to fight injustice in society. And others who want to be teachers. I mean, it just is. We all know like that, you know. And everybody needs to clean. I mean, unless you have a whole bevy of servants, everybody has to clean. I don't care who you are. You have to do some cleaning, at least of your own body. I mean, I guess if you're a big emperor, you have servants to wash your body for you. But, you know, most of us, we have to clean our own body. We have to do some kind of cleaning. If we don't cook, we're not going to eat nicely. Somebody's got to cook. Everybody's got to do that. Everyone's got to do some care of the body. Yeah? Definitely. Is it too late to understand our Varna? Well, if you're already retired, you might as well forget about it, because Varna is for the Grihastha Ashram. So Varna is supposed to be figured out when you're a student, and then, because Varna is your livelihood. So livelihood is for when you're sometime between 15 and 60, let's say, maybe 65. And then you retire. So what do we mean by retire? Retire means you retire from work. And sannyas means you're civilly dead. So even in the world, students, retired, and dead people don't have a career. So if you're a retired person or a dead person, then there's no point in figuring out your varna. Just figure out your talents and use them for Krishna. But if you're still a student or you're in the grihastha ashram, yes, please try to understand your varna if you want to be happy, even if you're already 35. And Kishori Gopika, you want to say something more?
Yes, hi Krishna.
Hi Krishna.
Hello, princesses. So following up to that is that I take it personally. So I became a devotee at the age of 23. And so I was already married, and then I was working. And even my parents became devotees at the same time. The thing is, they sort of became devotees a little older, and they had already lived their life. And now when they're discovering spiritual life, they feel that they've wasted their time in working hard. And so how do you help them in that way? That, okay, maybe is it too late for them to discover Bevar now?
How old are they?
60.
It's irrelevant at this point.
Yeah.
Varna is irrelevant after you've retired. It's irrelevant. It has no meaning anymore. But to find your talents and use them in Krishna's service and for the mission. But you're not supposed to be working for a livelihood then. You're supposed to be retired.
And when you're my age?
It's not too late now. I know people discovering their varna in their 30s. I don't know how old you are. You look very, very young. But I don't know. I mean, your age. I don't know. You look like you're 20. So, you know, certainly if you're still in your 30s and maybe even 40s, mm-hmm. But once you're in your 60s, forget it. Now it's time for something else. It's like if somebody is, you know, 60 or 70 and they say, oh, now I want to find my perfect spouse. You know, forget it now. Now it's time for something else. I mean, people do it. What can you do? People are going to do whatever they're going to do. But at least shastrically, that's over. If you haven't already found your perfect spouse by the time you're 60 or 70, just forget about it. And be a renunciate. And if you haven't figured out what you're supposed to do to earn your livelihood by the time you're retired from earning a livelihood, then just forget about it. And just do some service for Krishna. But if you're still earning your livelihood and you don't think you're properly situated, then certainly, even if you only have another 5 or 10 years of working, that's 5 or 10 years where it would be worthwhile to be properly situated. I need to get on to some other things today. And Mahalakshmi, you know you can always ask me things. And you do. So, thank you very, very much for giving me this opportunity.
Well, thank you so much, Mother Mila, for being with us. I have an anonymous question, but maybe I will text it to you later when we have some time. So, on behalf of Spend Mauritius and Preaching is a Sense, we'd like to thank you for your participation to be with us today and to be an eye-opener on the roles and a woman on her varna and ashrama. So thank you, Mila Mataji. And to show our gratitude, we will call out very loudly, three times, Hari Bol, to show our appreciation for Mataji.
Hari Bol.
It's like waves of Hari Bol. Maybe sometime I'll get to visit Mauritius again. Who knows? I was only there one time, and now here I am stuck. So let us see if Krishna arranges. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hare
Krishna.